How do you respond to critics who argue that animal proteins are necessary for peak muscular development?
That's a good question. I hear a lot less of those than I used to, which is heartening. But there's still plenty of trolls on the internet still. Essentially, one of the best studies you can point to was where they looked at, as a population, are vegetarians, vegans, the same body mass index and the same body composition as omnivores? The answer is no, they tend to be leaner. But in terms of lean body mass, the predictor of who was carrying the most lean body mass, i.e., muscle tissue, was protein intake. It was not animal versus plant whatsoever. So essentially, that means whether or not you're vegan, whether or not you eat animal products, the people who eat more protein tend to carry more muscle mass. And that's independent of exercise or anything else. And that also tells us that plant protein is perfectly adequate at building muscle. You can also look at training studies, with protein matched and exercise volume matched training studies. A plant-based protein source is just as effective at stimulating muscle protein synthesis at causing adaptation and resistance training. I myself, my experience has been I had to eat a little bit more after becoming vegan than I did as an omnivore. And I actually liken that to just an increase in my metabolic rate. I immediately lost body fat after transitioning to a vegan, and granted, this was, 17 years ago. But I had to eat a little bit more to maintain my weight and to gain muscle mass, but I had no problem gaining muscle mass. I was able to gain as much as I wanted. And that was actually an advantage because then dieting to get super lean for bodybuilding competitions became easier. I was able to eat more food while losing body fat, maintaining muscle mass.
Thank you. Chef AJ, you mentioned conquering cravings in your book. What strategies do you suggest for managing cravings for unhealthy foods?
So first I need to know what the cravings are for, but in general, the answer is don't have the thing you're addicted to or that you crave in your environment. Make it difficult, put a barrier between you and that item. So for example, if you're an alcoholic, whether you've gone to rehab or not, it's probably not a good idea to have alcohol in the house. You can't help the fact that the world has alcohol, but you don't have to have it in your house. It's very hard though with food because we don't have to have cigarettes or alcohol or recreational drugs, but we have to eat at some point. But we have a choice of what we eat. And when you eat these hyperpalatable pleasure trap foods, they say they bang on your brain. They cause you to want to eat more of them. They don't have the same satiety as whole natural foods with the fiber, water, vitamins, minerals, phytochemicals, antioxidants, and micronutrients. But I have a saying that I'm known for, which is if it's in your house, it's in your mouth. And you have to make it so that it's not easy for you to get those foods. Cravings are like an itch. And the thing is when you have an itch, you want to scratch it, but it doesn't necessarily make the itch go away. Often it makes it worse. And when you indulge a craving, people think, well, if I indulge the craving will go away. It actually intensifies the craving. So sometimes you have to learn some strategies or techniques of delaying or redirecting. So every time you don't indulge that craving. That's what willpower is, by the way. And it's a short, limited, re it's a time-limited resource, willpower, which gets depleted throughout the day. But every time you don't indulge that craving, you make it stronger. But I would argue that cravings for unhealthy food, and I believe Dr. Furman either has been or will be a speaker on this summit, he talks about that. It's often micronutrient deficiencies because if you're not eating enough plant foods with good nutrient contents like fruits, vegetables, whole grains, and legumes, what your body is actually seeking these micronutrients, but people confuse that with hunger, and then they eat more macronutrients, the hyperpalatable foods with high caloric value, but they're never really satisfying their fiber or nutrient intake. One of the things I've found that's been very successful for myself in my journey and many of the people I work with is vegetables, especially green vegetables, because they have a compound in them called thylakoids, which have been known to actually turn off the hunger switch and fight cravings for these hyperpalatable foods, particularly sugar, and they even block fat absorption. So, if you're craving sugar, weird as it sounds, steam some greens. But sometimes you do have to go through some discomfort if you're having cravings. Sometimes cravings are psychological too. They're not just physiological. It can be a combination, but that just shows you that food addiction is real because, if your craving is for, a sweet potato and broccoli, indulge it. If it's for, a hot fudge sundae, there could be some emotional stuff going on. It's a kind of a complex problem, and to give my short answer probably doesn't do it justice. But just whatever the question, Kale's the answer. Eats greens.
Thank you. Kartik, just to clarify, when we're talking about alternatives to beef, chicken, fish, and dairy, there's two versions. There's the alternative meat, like made of pea protein or what Beyond Meat and Impossible makes. And then there's the clone meat, which is actually supposed to, I don't know the terminology, but make actual meat. So how close are we to scale of either of these?
Yeah, so the former, which I would call like the mimics. So that's taking either plant or microbial ingredients to make something that, you know, tastes or has the texture of, say, chicken. I'd say for most of the food categories, we're basically already there. So, you know, for fluid milk, I would say, you know, we're pretty close. For like things like chicken, for things like beef, we're also pretty close. We're a little further away on things like cheese or steak. So, and for the other technology, so the cultivated meat technology, so that's where we take the stem cell of, say, a cow, and then grow that cell into like a full cut fillet. And that technology, I think, is still quite far away. So I think if I'm being forthright, I think it's still decades. And we even might not get there after decades.
So in terms of anything soon that's going to save the environment, it would be the Impossible and Beyond type burgers that are made of alternatives, not actual cloned meat or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the best is, you know, as I'm sure Derek and Chef AJ would advocate, is to convincing more people to do whole foods plant-based. And then, you know, for people who actually do need that, you know, meat, that meaty craving or sensation, yeah, for something like an Impossible burger.
Okay. Derek and Chef AJ, we got a couple of things going on. First, there are statistics saying that something like, I don't know the exact number, but something like 40% of the country, the United States, is obese. It depends where you look at the number, but it's in that range. Sometimes it looks it's a little lower, 35 to 40, but something around 40%. Then you have a new phenomenon. I don't know exactly all over the country how it is, but in New York, the use of these drugs like Ozempic to lose weight has become, I don't know how popular it is, but it seems extremely popular. The value of the company that makes it in Europe was something like the most highest market cap of any company in Europe or something. I might have that wrong, but something close to that. So what do you do when people come to you and say, hey, I'm obese and I really want to go on these new types of drugs? What exactly is your advice to them? What do you say to do? What's your recommendation?
Well, you know, they're very tempting because you lose weight much more quickly, obviously. And I don't think a lot of people are in this for the long haul. What a lot of people don't realize, unless they followed my journey, is it took me 27 months to lose my weight, but I've kept it off for 12 years. You know, and I did the fen-phen, and the minute the FDA took fen-phen off the market, the weight that I had lost, which was about 60 pounds, came back like with a vengeance and then some. So what I would say to people is, whatever you do to lose weight, whether it's a whole food plant-based diet, Ozempic, gastric bypass, whatever you do, you have to continue to do after you've lost the weight. And so my understanding is, with Ozempic, as beautifully as people claim it works, it's expensive, but even if it wasn't, you have to take it forever. And you know, that's a person's choice. And the thing is that the cost, from what I understand, is astronomical. And, you know, last time I checked, potatoes were pretty cheap and you could probably get the same results just eating potatoes, like Dr. McDougall says, and broccoli, but it's not going to happen as quickly. So I don't think you can talk people out of it, you know, because people are looking for a pill for every ill, a potion, a procedure, a quick fix. But I find in general, they don't work. And my concern is that while it seems very seductive right now to take these drugs because celebrities are taking them, what I'm seeing in a lot of people is that their success is like my before picture. That I'm not trying to be mean about that, but it's like, yes, they've lost weight, but they're still really barely at a normal BMI. They're not as lean as the people that I see that eat the way that we recommend. So I guess it just depends what your goals are. You know, for a lot of people, I think it's an excuse to continue eating crap, you know, because basically, you know, when I was on Fen-Phen, it was great. I could eat whatever I want because it tricked my brain into thinking it wasn't hungry. So I could keep drinking my Dr. Pepper and Coke Slurpees, but less of it. So I think a lot of people, unfortunately, Stephen, are looking for trimness and slimness more than they are health. But I've always said, if you follow the diet that makes you healthy, which is a whole food plant-based diet, eventually the weight loss will come. So I would say, I would try to advise them against it, but I think the people that want to do that are going to do it. And so hopefully there won't be any long-term repercussions like there were with Fen-Phen, which created a hole in your heart and lung. But I don't think it's been really tested for weight loss all that long. And I think one day the shoe is going to drop, and then, you know, they'll be right back where they were.
Thank you.
I agree with everything Chef AJ said. Most of what I've heard about Ozempic has been word of mouth. Actually, I've not talked to many experts or clinicians about it. But it does sound like many people I've talked to, they have a friend, a cousin, a relative who's using it now, or several. And I absolutely agree. It seems short-sighted to me. And from what I hear, barring the nutrition part and barring the long-term health part, it sounds like quality of life, it has a negative impact because from what I hear, it makes you feel lethargic. It makes you food sound gross. And it turns that whole part of your life that can be a joy of having a great food and breaking bread with friends and experiencing all these exotic flavors and, you know, feeling vital and, you know, energized from good, healthy food. It turns that into kind of this gray, like, oh, I don't want to eat. So, and then, just as a chef AJ said, it's a way for people to keep eating these bad, rich, addictive foods that are, you know, malnourishing people already. Now you're eating way less of them on top of this risky prescription drug. So health-wise, that can't be a good situation. So you're having less of this really processed food that's already not giving you what your body needs. You're putting more stress on your body. And it's very much unsustainable. Yes, I'm sure people are seeing results with it. That's not a question. And I'm sure people are going to continue trying it because everyone wants that easy fix without having to apply themselves to change their habits. But the second you stop, the second it gets pulled from the market because it's dangerous, or the second you decide that, you know, you're tired of hating eating, then the weight's going to come back. So it's not a sustainable strategy.
Thank you. Kartik, Jeffrey Smith, who speaks about GMOs, has pointed out that there is a GMO ingredient in Impossible Burgers. What is the general health profile of these alternative meat burgers? Are they a health food? Are they better than a real burger? Are they the same? Is it unknown? Is there any information on this?
Yes. Actually, there's been quite a bit of work on this. And comparing to a classic beef burger, there's no question an Impossible Burger is healthier. It's got it's got less of like all the bad things. It's got less saturated fat. It's got more of the plant vitamins, and I'm forgetting some of the other specific metrics, but the last I saw, it's pretty unassailable. The only thing that it doesn't compare well on is salt content. Of course, it's no substitute for chickpeas or kale. And so if we're judging it on that sort of scale, yeah, of course, it's not going to be healthy. But I think if we're asking the question if it's going to replace a beef burger, I think yes,